Chapter 29. It didn't take Mr. Cranford long to make good his threat. He called at the surgery shortly after lunch the following day, and Siegfried and I, enjoying a post-prandial cigarette in the sitting room, heard the jangle of the doorbell. We didn't get up because most of the farmers walked in after ringing. The dogs, however, went into their usual routine. They had had a long run on the high moor that morning and had just finished licking out their dinner bowls. Tired and distended, they had collapsed in a snoring heap round Siegfried's feet. There was nothing they wanted more than 10 minutes' peace, but, dedicated as they were to their self-appointed role of fierce guardians of the house, they did not hesitate. They leapt, baying, from the rug and hurled themselves into the passage. People often wondered why Siegfried kept 5 dogs. Not only kept them, but took them everywhere with him. Driving on his rounds, it was difficult to see him at all among the shaggy heads and waving tails, and anybody approaching the car would recoil in terror from the savage barking and the bared fangs and glaring eyes framed in the windows. "I cannot, for the life of me, understand," Siegfried would declare, thumping his fist on his knee, "why people keep dogs as pets. A dog should have a useful function. Let it be used for farm work, for shooting, for guiding, but why anybody should keep the things just hanging around the place beats me." It was a pronouncement he was continually making, often through a screen of flapping ears and lolling tongues as he sat in his car. His listener would look wonderingly from the huge greyhound to the tiny terrier, from the spaniel to the whippet to the Scotty, but nobody ever asked Siegfried why he kept his own dogs. I judged that the pack fell upon Mr. Cranford about the bend of the passage, and many a lesser man would have fled, but I could hear him fighting his way doggedly forward. When he came through the sitting-room door, he had removed his hat and was beating the dogs off with it. It wasn't a wise move, and the barking rose to a higher pitch. The man's eyes stared and his lips moved continuously, but nothing came through. Siegfried, courteous as ever, rose and indicated a chair. His lips, too, were moving, no doubt in a few gracious words of welcome. Mr. Cranford flapped his black coat, swooped across the carpet, and perched. The dogs sat in a ring around him and yelled up into his face. Usually they collapsed after their exhausting performance, but there was something in the look or smell of Mr. Cranford that they didn't like. Siegfried leant back in his chair, put his fingers together, and assumed a judicial expression. Now and again he nodded understandingly or narrowed his eyes as if taking an interesting point. Practically nothing could be heard from Mr. Cranford, but occasionally a word or phrase penetrated.
"Have a serious complaint to make. Doesn't know his job. Can't afford. Not a rich man. These dang dogs. Won't have him again. Down dog, get by. Now but robbery."
Siegfried, completely relaxed and apparently oblivious of the din, listened attentively. But as the minutes passed, I could see the strain beginning to tell on Mr. Cranford. His eyes began to start from their sockets and the veins corded on his scrawny neck as he tried to get his message across. Finally, it was too much for him. He jumped up and a leaping brown tide bore him to the floor. He gave a last defiant cry, lashed out again with his hat, and was gone. Pushing open the dispensary door a few weeks later, I found my boss mixing an ointment. He was working with great care, turning and returning the glutinous mass on a marble slab. "What's this you're doing?" I asked. Siegfried threw down his spatula and straightened his back.
"Ointment for a boar."
He looked past me at Tristan, who had just come in. "And I don't know why the hell I'm doing it when some people are sitting round on their backsides." He indicated the spatula. "Right, Tristan, you can have a go. When you've finished your cigarette, that is." His expression softened as Tristan hastily nipped out his woodbine and began to work away on the slab.
"Pretty stiff concoction, that. Takes a bit of mixing," Siegfried said, with satisfaction, looking at his brother's bent head. "The back of my neck was beginning to ache with it."
He turned to me. "By the way, you'll be interested to hear, it's for your old friend Cranford, for that prize boar of his. It's got a nasty sore across his back, and he's worried to death about it. Wins him a lot of money at the shows, and a blemish there would be disastrous."